Good afternoon, everyone. I call the Senate's Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:31 p.m. on Tuesday, March 5th. We're reading in room 205 of the Capitol Building in the Betrovich Room. Please silence your cell phones. As a courtesy, committee members present are Senator Giesel, Senator Dunbar, Vice Chair Kaufman, and Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Wilson. We do have a quorum to conduct business this afternoon. This afternoon, we have removed SB 214, Medical Assistant Demonstration Project, from the agenda. We'll hold that here as a later date. And we will hold confirmation hearings on four Alaskans who have set forward to serve our state. First, we'll discuss the reappointments of Dr. David Barnes of Palmer for the State Medical Board. We have David Wilson of Palmer for the Medical Board. We have Brett Fisher of Anchorage of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board of Authorities, and John Sturgeon of Anchorage to the Mental Health Trust Board of Authority. We'll hear from each of the appointments and then take public comments and testimonies on their reappointments. Also, I will be stepping out. I have other business in state business in another committee, and we'll be passing the gavel over to our Vice Chair Kaufman. We'll take a brief at ease for that transition.
All right, we're gaveling back in. We will hear from each of the appointees, take public comments on the reappointments. First up, Dr. David Barnes. At this time, I'll invite Dr. Barnes to speak to his qualifications, his credentials, and his reasons for wanting to be reappointed to the State Medical Board. Mr. Barnes, please place yourself on the record.
Hi, I'm Dr. David L. Barnes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good. Just a brief statement. I think you have my CV in front of you, but I was born in a small town in southern Minnesota called Mankato. We typically helped my grandfather on his farms in northern Iowa while I was growing up and through high school, so I worked there during the summertime. Got my pilot's license in high school, progressed onto an instrument rating, commercial pilot's license, and certified flight instructor certificates. I went to college at a small college in southern Minnesota called Gustavus Adolphus, graduated with a degree in Russian studies and most of my pre-med curriculum complete. I took a detour by working for the National Security Agency for about 9 years after graduating from college from 1985 until 1996. Went to medical school then at the University of North Texas Health Science Center in Fort Worth. Graduated in 1999. Went to Denver where I completed an internal medicine residency. And then started working in Denver as a hospitalist for about a year. I worked at the major hospitals of Denver. We dealt with complicated patients in hospitalized and ICUs. Was recruited by Valley Hospital, came up here in 2003. Initially, I worked for Valley Hospital in both an inpatient on-call position in the emergency room and working in running a clinic. Did that for 5.5 years and then switched completely to the outpatient world. So I've worked extensively in medicine, both inpatient and outpatient. Internal medicine typically handles the most complex patients, cancers, advanced diabetes, heart disease, that sort of thing. I've been on the medical board for a year now. It's been a learning experience. I would love to continue to participate in that. It's my goal to, you know, help regulate via the statutes, you know, the safe practice of medicine, but also to allow, you know, freedom for our physicians to practice appropriately. Alaska is a unique state. I think the biggest problem we have is just our remoteness. We've got a lot of difficulty recruiting physicians here and retaining them. We also have a problem with just the remote nature of much of the state, how to get health care to people in these remote areas. Telemedicine has helped, but I'm also, after being on the board for years, seeing telemedicine create problems in that we've got a lot of physicians that are providing remote health care from locations as distant as Florida, but they're not, they don't have a stake in our state. That kind of frustrates me. They're not living here. They're not providing, you know, hands-on care. I'm not sure how we solve that. That's kind of a brief who's who. How can I answer questions?
Yes, I believe we have questions. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thanks, Dr. Barnes. I appreciate your comments, specifically the one around ensuring that our physicians have freedom to practice as they've been trained to do. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the process that has been happening to PAs within the purview of the medical board, particularly the regulation that was propagated and the amount of feedback that you've received and your thoughts about those regulations and the process. I hope we all can get to a space where we believe that anyone who's trained to provide medical care is supported by the medical board to do so.
Yes, that started before I came on the board, and it was a learning experience for me. Initially, there was a push when I first came on to get PAs to have a lot greater hour, you know, qualifications. It seemed like a great idea until you looked at it in practice, and it was beyond the scope of what many other people are required to do, nurse practitioners and others. It was also very clear that it was going to restrict access, you know, for remote locations. And I think pretty much everybody on the board, after hearing public testimony and looking at it, realized that that was not a good idea. And I honestly don't know how that idea came out. As I said, it was in position when I first or second meeting I was involved in, I heard about it. But the current consensus, I believe, and what's good is just if they're qualified and they have a reasonable amount of time, they should be able to practice. There's certainly supervision for PAs with, the doctor-PA relationship.
Follow up.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and that's helpful to hear. As we're also working to ensure that physician's assistants are able to practice independently as long as they have that background and credentialing, which you do ensure that there is adequate oversight for. I am curious, just in terms of some of the things we've known that have occurred to the medical board, can you provide some insight or input on what your current workload is? What are some main issues before the board?
The biggest, I mean, personally myself, we get a lot of cases coming to us with physician complaints that we have to review. And that's been the biggest thing. But that's, to be honest, that's variable. I mean, you can get crushed with a number of cases week after week, and then it'll back off. It's much like my job, where it's either feast or famine. Sometimes I would like more people on the board. Sometimes I think, no, we're just right. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
Yes.
The other questions? Well, it looks like we have no questions, so at this point, Dr. Barnes, I'll thank you for testifying today and for your interest, and we will move on then.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. So the next, and this may be confusing to the committee, is Mr. David Wilson, not the one in the same, our committee chair, and I understand that Mr. Wilson is on Teams. So, Mr. Wilson, will you please place yourself on the record?
Yeah, this is Dave Wilson. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
All right. Senator Coffin, thank you for taking my time. By way of introduction, I'm a 737 captain for Alaska Airlines and serve as the Anchorage chair of the Airline Pilots Professional Standards Board. I routinely fly in and out of Juneau and have likely had the pleasure of having some of you on one of my flights. I moved to Kodiak in 1987. It was supposed to be just for the summer. I was planning on getting a commercial fishing job and then head back to school, but I really liked the town of Kodiak, so I decided to stay for the winter. Right away, recognizing in order to get around this great state requires either a boat or an airplane, and so I began pursuing a career in aviation. I went back to the lower 48 for a couple of years to complete my flight training and then came back in the spring of 93 to fly for a company called Mark Air Express. I lived and flew out of Bethel and the town of St. Mary's on the Yukon River for the majority of that year. That experience really exposed me to the incredible challenges our native communities face just trying to live in rural Alaska. The cost alone in getting groceries and basic necessities to the village is inordinate, let alone the challenge of getting the right parts to keep your four-wheeler or Toyo stove running. Facing just a few of these challenges on my own caused me to appreciate the resourcefulness and independent resilience that characterizes the Alaska natives that live in these rural communities. St. Mary's had very limited health care facilities. Consequently, on several occasions, I was called upon in the middle of the night to fly a critically injured resident or a mother who had gone into early labor to Bethel to be tended by the capable staff at the hospital there. I also had the privilege of flying the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation medical staff to the numerous villages in the area. The YKHC medical staff did a lot of flying to the local communities, which gave me the opportunity to get to know many of them. I recognize that this is a group of talented professionals that are truly committed to their community. They would often travel with a sleeping bag, understanding that the unpredictability of the weather might keep them in the village for a few days, and they would be sleeping on the floor of the health clinic or in the school gym when we would land at the village. We were always met with an exuberant crowd, but I was most impressed with their popularity among the kids. It was more than apparent to me that these talented medical professionals were more than committed to the health and welfare of these wonderful Alaska natives and were willing to serve in this challenging environment to ensure that they would continue to live and thrive in their own communities. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of that. After Mark Air folded in 1995, I returned to Kodiak to fly for Pennair. I had the opportunity to fly the Kodiak Area Native Association medical staff to the local villages. As before, I observed the same professionalism and commitment to serving the Alaska Natives in the communities around Kodiak Island. My time in Kodiak was also a great experience as I was able to forge a number of lasting relationships within the Alaska Native communities around the island, many of which I keep up with today. We moved to Palmer in 2000, and my family continued to benefit from the great care from our local physicians. Our family doctor, who has since retired, would occasionally call me at home to check on the kids after we had been in to see him. Recently, my father passed away after a long, arduous battle with dementia. Unfortunately, we were able to care for him at home until he died. I personally oversaw every aspect of his care. Through this process, I was able to work with some of the finest, most compassionate physicians and nurses in the state. My interest in serving on the state medical board is to somehow give back to this great medical community. I see my role serving two aspects as a public member on the state medical board. First, in representing the perspective of the patient, particularly from the rural Alaska community that faces the greatest logistical challenges of obtaining medical care. Second is the experience of human factors analysis of aviation safety. The State Medical Board, not unlike the Professional Standards Board that I currently serve on, requires a team of unbiased professionals that are methodical and tenacious in their pursuit of the truth and lead with absolute integrity to function as it was commissioned. The Professional Standards Board is the first line of defense in dealing with aircrew behavioral and compliance issues. Pilots, like many medical professionals, are highly trained and self-motivated. They carry a tremendous load of responsibility for the lives of those that are under their care and are often called upon to make life-altering decisions, often with very limited time and data. At times, this process is further complicated by external influences, such as organizational cultures of noncompliance, personal financial interests, substance abuse, strained relationships at home, or conflicts within the workplace. I have personally observed that systematic noncompliance often begins early and often leaves a trail evidenced through performance reviews, training records, and disciplinary actions. But despite this evidence, pilots often successfully promote through the ranks and transition through many employers due in large part to the demand for talent and the lack of adequate vetting. Unfortunately, it isn't until someone is injured and the post-event investigation exposes the trail of misconduct. We cannot afford to play the game of chances with misconduct. You see, professionalism and noncompliance are both very contagious in the workplace. One leads to mutual trust and understanding, while the other is a cancer that creates confusion and doubt, neither of which can be tolerated in aviation or medicine. I believe that behavioral deviation from standard operating procedures is highly regulated. In highly regulated industries such as medicine and aviation are often influenced by external pressures. And to fully understand and address these problems, we need to drill down to the underlying root causes and fully understand them before we can expect any meaningful change towards consistent performance. My role on the Professional Standards Board is to help our pilots identify and address the underlying cause of their conflict or behavior, and then assist them in getting help if needed. It is my goal to continue this same approach on the Alaska State Medical Board. I'm happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have any questions from the committee?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. I'm looking through some of your volunteerism in your community, and it's very commendable. I have a similar question as the one I asked the previous conferee. That might not be the correct word to use, is within regards to the physician's assistants and the recent experiences they've had with the medical board and the regulatory process. And if you have any insight or thoughts about ensuring that our physician's assistants are able to work in rural Alaska independently.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. I appreciate, as I understand it, you are from the Nome area?
I am, and I appreciate that you flew Mark Air, because I flew them as well.
Yeah, they probably owe you money. Anyway, so that is a great question, and I really appreciate bringing that up. This matter of the PA regulation is, it was new to me. And my perspective is one of an education on this. First of all, let me say that I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't lean heavily one way or the other. Being part of the rural Alaska Native community, I feel that it is important that we not compromise on their care. First of all, that is my highest concern. Second of all, a lot of the public feedback that I heard was that there is a shortage of PAs, and that what was the driving force behind the desire to change the regulations was to accommodate this need. And so because I'm not in this industry, I made a couple of phone calls to try to figure out a little bit about this. And what I learned was that there aren't a lot of PAs coming out of school. And I thought, well, that is really interesting. What is, you know, why the shortage? Because that seems to be the driving force behind this, the regulation changes. And so what can we do to increase the supply? And so I know in the aviation industry, some of these airlines have actually bought flight schools and offered funds and loans and grants in order to help people get through the training program. That might be a solution that's worth considering. The other thing is I called YKHC and a number of others, and they said, hey, what does a fully staffed PA department in your organization look like? And it had some great conversations. And what was interesting in all of the conversations I had, the staffing
requirements really exceeded their funding. And I thought, well, that's anyway, it was just something noteworthy. And then finally, a note is in the changes in the medical and the aviation industry are really driven more by the insurance underwriting community more than regulation. So I'll give you an example. In the aviation community, the FAA has determined a minimum experience level for pilots. However, the insurance industry really makes the premiums for insuring a pilot with those experience levels so high, so expensive, that no one really wants to hire anybody with a minimum experience level, because they obviously pose a significant risk to the public and a financial risk to the underwriters. So however this regulation is determined, the response is going to be from the insurance underwriting community. If we make, as a state, as a regulatory body, if we make regulations that take away all the supervision and oversight from any particular practice, the underwriting community is going to respond. And they may make it preventatively expensive in order to practice, as they have in the aviation industry. I actually reached out to one of the leading underwriters, leading medical malpractice underwriters, and I said, how would this affect the underwriters or the medical professionals? And I gave them this scenario. Let's just say that the PAs did not have any oversight of the physicians in the traditional collaborative arrangement that they have. And it was interesting. They told me, the underwriter that I spoke to told me, we would meet them where they're at. And I said, what does that look like? They said, if we would insure them where they're at. However, if we perceive the risk to be significant, the exclusions, the premiums, and the limits are going to reflect that. I said, fair enough. So that is, like I said, Senator Tobin, I feel that as an organization, I think responsible regulatory limits of some sort need to be established, or the insurance underwriting community will step in and they will regulate it. And it may make it difficult for PAs to practice in the field because of the perceived increased exposure to the underwriting community. That's a very lengthy answer, but that's my thoughts.
Thank you. Just out of curiosity, does the state medical board also provide oversight of PAs, whether they will be collaborative or untethered?
From what I have heard, from what I understand, I think that we will continue, unless they decide to create their own board.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any further questions from the committee? All right. If not, I'll now open public testimony on Dr. Barnes and Mr. Wilson's confirmations. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? I see no one in the room. Is there anyone on the phone lines who would like to testify as the reappointment of Dr. Barnes and Mr. Wilson? We have no one on the phones. So this concludes our list of callers. So I'll now close public testimony on Dr. Barnes and Mr. Wilson's confirmations. So I want to thank you, Mr. Wilson, for your interest in this reappointment and for your testimony today. So thank you very much. Next, we'll move on to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees. And at this time, I will invite Brent Fisher to speak to his qualifications, his credentials, and his reason for wanting to be reappointed to the Board of Trustees. And so, Mr. Fisher, if you would please place yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you very much, Senator Kaufman. This is Brent Fisher. And to start out, I've been on the trust board for 3 years, and this is a reappointment I'm currently serving as the vice chair, and previously I served as the secretary and finance committee chair. I am a veteran of the U.S. Army Medical Service Corps. I received my bachelor's degree from Brigham Young University and a graduate certificate from the American Graduate School of International Management and a master's degree from the University of Texas at Austin. I've got 30 years of healthcare experience in a variety of different sub-industries within healthcare, and I've sat on the board of directors of a number of different associations within healthcare, including on the board of the American Medical Group Association. I am a fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives, a fellow in the American College of Medical Practice Executives, and a fellow in the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. I've also published a number of articles in academic journals, trade magazines, and newspapers on the topics of healthcare and other topics, and even won the best article of the year in the Journal of Healthcare Management. I have enjoyed the last 3 years that I've worked on the trust board, and would like to continue to work on, because we're still in the middle of doing a number of different kinds of things. We are creating more transparency within the trust about how we do things and our financial situation. One of our biggest projects that we've done is the Crisis Now project. It's not done. It's growing throughout Alaska. Crisis Now is really a mechanism for providing counseling services to those who are in a crisis mode with regard to mental health disorders and suicide prevention. And with crisis management teams that operate to go out and really take the place of what historically have been done by police officers and troopers in the past. And that's, again, we've been working on that for a couple of years, and we're growing that gradually throughout the entire state. The great thing about it is that we will be able to provide telephonically counseling services to every place within the state, all the villages, anybody that's got a phone, will be able to provide those services. And where possible, then we can also help fund crisis management teams that are actually local. So that's probably the biggest thing we've done, and we've got a lot more to do with it. We're, again, looking at all different kinds of projects and collaborating with providers in the community to help those who have mental health disorders, and actually preemptively helping people in the foster care program and the children before they become beneficiaries that need a lot more help, if we can preemptively help them. So we've got a really good group on the board of trustees, I think, and that are collaborating with the staff that are making these kinds of things happen. And I would like to continue to make that happen for another 5-year term. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. To the committee, any questions for Mr. Fisher? It looks like you may have answered all the questions. So I don't see anything from the committee right now. So thank you for your testimony, for your interest, for the work that you do on this. And so at this time, I will now invite John Sturgeon to speak to his qualifications, his credentials, and his reasons for wanting to be reappointed to the Board of Trustees. Mr. Sturgeon, if you would, please place yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. For the record, my name is John Sturgeon, a resident of Anchorage. Been in Alaska about 54 years. My background is that I was in the U.S. Navy, served 2 tours in Vietnam, went to the University of Minnesota, graduated in forestry, came to Alaska right out of college, and been working in the forest products industry, generally in natural resource industry in Alaska for the last 54 years. Served on the Board of Forestry, and I served as chairman of the Board of Forestry. I was state forester appointed by Governor Hammond and reappointed by Governor Sheffield. I was a chair of the Board of Forestry for a number of years. And I've been on the Mental Health Trust for the last 5 years. As far as background and issues to do with the trust itself, I was on the board of directors of Pacific Northwest Medical University. That's a university that tries to produce doctors to live in the work in rural areas. That's their mission statement, is to get people in the rural and underserved areas, places like Bethel and Nome and Kodiak, those kind of places. But we focus on the five-state area. I have been on the board, like I said, for 5 years. My expertise, obviously, is in the area of natural resource management. So I've been chair of the Natural Resource Committee for the last 5 years. And I work with the Mental Health Land Trust Office on a regular basis, advising and helping and whatever I can do to help them generate additional funds. As I'm sure everybody knows, that the trust does not get any kind of government money. It has to earn all its money. And so development of the trust resources, whether they be timber or mining or leases or gravel or whatever else, are pretty important. And that's one of the areas that I try to focus on, where I think I can get the most help. But as my previous trustee has said, programs like Crisis Now and the one of my areas that I took particular interest in is the foster care program. They added another couple million dollars to it at the request of the board to have additional focus on prevention and trying to make sure that the children that are in the foster care system aren't bounced around too much, and that they can, when they come out of the foster care program, they don't end up in some very bad situation. So anyway, I'd like to serve another 5 years. I enjoyed my past 5 years, and it's kind of my background in a nutshell. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony to the committee. Any questions for Mr. Darden? I don't see any questions, and so thank you for your interest, for your testimony today, for your service on this board. We appreciate it. And at this time, we'll now open public testimony for the appointments of Brent Fisher and John Sturgeon. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? It appears not. We'll now go to the phone lines. Do we have anyone online? We have no one on the phones, so this concludes our list of callers. We'll now close public testimony on these confirmations. Brief at ease. On the record, Senator Tovin, is there a motion to forward the names of the appointees from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the appointments of David Barnes and David Wilson to the State Medical Board, and Brent Fisher and John Sturgeon to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees to be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
Is there opposition to the motion? Hearing none, the appointments will be forwarded to joint session. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. We're back on the record, and so that concludes our business for today. Are there any closing comments from any of the members? It appears not. As a reminder, on Thursday, March 7th, we will meet jointly for the HESS committee in room 106. So a change of rooms, please note that, to hear a presentation by the Citizens Review Panel and a response from the Office of Children's Services. Thank you for attending. We have adjourned at 4:06 p.m.